Welcome to From Caving In to Crushing It, the podcast for those who find themselves immersed in adversity and choose to write their story instead of having others write it for them. I'm Drew Duraney, and I'm your host.
Today's guest is Jeff Hall. In a world where men are reclaiming their inner strength through vulnerability, my journey into the lives of young gang members has been an unexpected but profound one. My childhood summering on Long Beach Island and school year in Colorado was far removed from the realities of gang life and the lives of these kids. But my own struggles with self-worth have served as a powerful bridge, allowing me to connect deeply with these young men on their own journeys. My transformative experience as a 22-year-old living in East Africa instilled in me a desire to root myself in my own community in Denver, where a different kind of war rages, one fought in the hearts of these young men. Beyond the gang rivalries like the Bloods and Crips lies an internal battle, an unknown desire to find their own strength of worth. The outward aggression and violence are but masks for the deep inner pain they carry. As a mentor to these young men, I have the privilege of walking alongside them, revealing that they are worthy and that they are children of God. Enjoy the show.
Hey, Jeff, it's good to see you.
Man, Drew, good to see you too.
Thanks for coming on. And I was thinking just, you know, before you came on, how I think it's pretty cool that, you know, you and I, we could know somebody for so long and then we meet someone only for a couple weeks and it feels like we've known them for a long time. And I remember when we first talked, we were on the phone. I was in the parking lot waiting for my daughter's field hockey game, and I did not want to cancel on you, but we had the best conversation. I learned so much about you. I figured, you know, I got to have him come on. I mean, basically you're like, I'm 55. You're like 30 years younger than I am. Right. And, what you've done in your youth and what you're doing now freaking amazes the hell out of me. And I'm inspired by it. And so I wanted to be able to share that with the audience.
Man, thank you so much. I appreciate it. It's great to be on. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to it.
Absolutely. So, you know, in life, Jeff, and you know this, that when we're growing up, we're basically told if we do certain things in life, if we do A plus B plus C, D is going to happen. And like, we're thinking it's a linear path in life and we expect it. And then when something gets in the way and kind of derails our straight path, we're like, wait a second, this is not supposed to happen. And then we're thrown into decision mode. We have to make a decision. Do we give up or do we plow forward? And I pride myself on having people on, men and women who've decided not to retreat and not to give up and have decided to move forward and become stronger human beings because of their adversity, not despite it. And you're one of those people. In such a young age, you've done so much and gone through so much and are doing so much for yourself and for people. I really wanted to have you on and have you explain to us, you know, what that defining moment was in life for you, whether it's a long time ago or recent, where it was either a tap on the shoulder or a 2x4 upside the head saying, hey, Jeff, there's a different way you can live. Why don't you consider that? We've all had defining moments. Love to learn about yours.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say I had a few that really defined me and who I am. And the first one started when I was 6 months old. So I was diagnosed with really severe asthma and to the point where I was hospitalized for weeks at a time. I had these oxygen machines with me at my house. My parents had to alternate sleeping in my room every night to make sure I was still breathing. There was tons of emergency drives to the hospital in the middle of the night. And that went on for years until I was about 10 years old, where it was kind of this constant threat of my life. The doctors talked to my parents about prepping them for me dying because of how severe the asthma was. And through that experience, I think what I gained was an appreciation for life, because it wasn't right off the bat, it wasn't promised to me. Mm-hmm. And so that helped me just realize this every day is not given to you, and I want to really take advantage of this life that I have. And so that was really helpful at a young age to appreciate that. Mm-hmm. It helped me to just want to do everything. I felt like, man, let me try everything, because it doesn't matter if I fail, because I'm not even supposed to be here. So it took away a lot of that kind of pride I had of, hey, let me try new sports, or let me try different clubs, or let me try different activities. And I just started doing all that stuff. Right. Then another defining moment happened. This is now years later in my 20s. I was 20 years old. And so high school athlete, played three sports all through high school. And then I was doing a semester abroad in Australia, and I had a really bad accident where I broke both of my legs off of an overpass. I was 2.5 stories high, and that landed me into hospital for weeks. And the most independent I'd ever been. You know, I'm 20 years old. I'm in a different country. I'm doing the semester abroad thing. And then I had my identity kind of wrapped up in a lot of that, plus being this athlete. And then as soon as, man, this accident happened, all of that came crashing down. I couldn't walk. I was in a wheelchair for 6 months. I had needed help for everything. Oh, man, and it just broke me, because I realized that I started to put my identity back into these worldly things. And so that was a huge defining moment where all that got stripped away. And really, it was a faith builder. It was like, all right, Lord, who am I without these external things?
Right.
How'd that happen? The doctors would tell me I'm not going to be able to walk again. Or
You fell off at, what you said, two-story? Yeah. Had that, you were riding a bike or something? What was?
No, so it was nighttime in the city. I jump over a barrier to get onto a sidewalk.
Yeah.
Or, sorry, from the sidewalk to a barrier, over the barrier, onto the road. Walking across the road, a car comes. So nighttime, headlights in my face. I jump over the other barrier to not get hit by the car, to get back onto the other side sidewalk. But it was actually an overpass, and I fell 2.5 stories and crushed my legs and all that
God,
stuff.
Geez.
Yeah.
Certainly not what you were expecting. Was, oh, my God.
Oh, no. You know when you don't think there's any more step in the stairs, and then there's like one, or there's one more, and you're like, oh.
Yeah.
And it's like 6 inches of like, oh, my gosh. Was that for like 30 feet or whatever? So it was really scary. But so yeah, that was a tough period of time. Just felt like I lost my full identity, and by the grace of God, I'm fully healed and able to run and walk and still can dunk a basketball and do all that stuff. But it was in that hospital bed where I was like, this is not going to define me. I'm not going to let this break me and hold me down. And just, man, I spent years rehabbing to get back to being a college athlete and all that, and being everything else I've wanted to be.
Must have messed up the time abroad.
Yeah, it was towards the end. I couldn't even go to some of my classes because they weren't wheelchair accessible. So I'm like, I didn't know anything about being in a wheelchair, but it gave me a deeper appreciation for sure for people with needs, with handicap needs and stuff. Like just the way people treated me, as if I was kind of less than because I'm in a wheelchair and I'm trying to navigate a city when there's curbs and I can't even get up a curb by myself and all kinds of stuff. So that really, really humbled me and taught me a lot for sure.
Absolutely. So after that time was over and you come home from Australia, what happened then?
All right. So home from Australia, finished college, graduate. Now I'm 21, 22 and graduate with a business degree. I really love and have a passion for business, but my whole life I've also really loved mentorship and mentoring kids. And so I raced sailboats all through middle school, high school, and that was my sport I did in college. And so during my summers, I would coach kids in sailing and teach kids how to sail. This deep desire to help these kids on and off the water. And so then I just started getting involved in more things that worked with youth. But I really didn't know what I was going to do with my life. You know, talking about linear progression in your life. And so, hey, go to business school and then get a business job. And so that was like what was expected of me and what I was supposed to do. But I got a call from a friend about going to Africa, to East Africa and Rwanda, and helping start a nonprofit there. And so that was totally different from what I was planning on doing and what I was supposed to do with my business degree. But I just, I prayed about it and ended up buying a one-way ticket to Rwanda in the summer of 2000, 12. Ended up living there for a year, and that year totally changed my whole life. It was my first time ever being a minority, first time, you know, not knowing the language, not knowing what the heck I was doing, having no safety nets, no security, and just taking a risk and going out there and helping build up this organization. And ended up, the person I went with left, and so then I was like there by myself, and that was another low point. I'm like, what the heck am I doing here? I don't know. I don't even know how to buy electricity. There's like different systems out there where you can't just, you know, I didn't even know how to buy electricity in America at the time. I didn't even rent a house yet.
Yeah.
But then there you got to go to this little hut, and then they give you, you give them money, and then they give you a little piece of paper with a number on it. And then I got to go find this little electricity box in this place I was renting, and everything was hard. And so
it was her idea. It was her idea for the nonprofit, right? And then it was just not what she expected.
That's a whole different story.
Oh my goodness. So you're by yourself now taking.
Yeah, it was tough for her. She also had an.
Wow.
Yeah. She also had an injury that made it harder with her knee, that made it harder for her to be there and all that kind of stuff. But so then I just started building relationships in these villages with these kids, and I would just spend time with them every day. And then I started teaching English with them. And then I was working in or connected to some other kids in this market, and they call them street kids, and they're homeless. They've dropped out of school a lot of times. In the second grade, so really educated, but they don't have parents. They're orphan kids, and there's no orphanages in Rwanda, so they just sleep under bridges, kind of band together to help each other out, and they will do any kind of manual labor for work, and they'll unload trucks at that kind of thing, but they're treated terribly. And so I started teaching English with them and doing some life skills and some business classes, and helping them start a couple different businesses that they were able to run. And so they had like a little shop, and then they had a pig farm. And so that was sweet. And then I was teaching English in a missionary school. And so it just became this awesome experience where my life and my community and my purpose and all that was all connected. And it totally changed the rest of my life.
That's unbelievable. So how long did you stay there, just for that 1 year?
Yep, I was there for that 1 year full time, and then I go back every year to year and a half since then. I've got a lot of great connections from that time. I'm actually a kid that I met when he was 10 years old. His name's Patrick. Was able to help him get through his education. He came from a single parent household in, you know, Africa poverty, where it is, they're not sure if they're getting, you know, meals today. They're living off of $1.50 a day for a whole family. That kind of thing. But he's really smart, really hard work. So I'm able to put him through these schools, and he just did so well. He taught himself English, talk on the phone when I left. And then now he graduated from secondary school, which is the equivalent of high school. And he got into a college out here in Denver, and trying to get him a visa to actually be able to come out here, and he'll live in my house and come and fulfill his lifetime dream of getting a.
He's going to get a college degree in Colorado, and you're going to help him do that. That's amazing, Jeff.
Benefit and affect his community back in Musanze, Rwanda. Because unemployment is like 60% over there. Wow. But if you've got a college degree, you have a lot more opportunities, especially if it's from America, for sure. Got a lot more opportunities to be able to make impact and change in his home country.
That's great. What a great story. So what are you working on now?
Then after Rwanda, moved to Denver full-time in 2013.
Yep.
And moved into an inner city neighborhood and been really intentionally pouring into my community here. So it's a majority Black neighborhood.
Okay.
Maybe in a minority when I moved into this neighborhood. And just got really involved in different organizations in this area, coaching basketball and different mentoring groups. And so that's been huge for my last 10 years of my life, is being able to work with kids, mostly our fatherless kids and gang affiliated kids, and to be in a mentorship type role with them. That's been a huge part of my life and huge blessing in my life. And then outside of Got a digital marketing company called Slant Marketing, and a real estate investment fund called Generational Wealth Partners. So I can share about any of those things.
Wow. Well, you know, what I find amazing is you go out to Rwanda and you had no choice but to be a minority in an area where there was a ton of poverty, and you helped people. Then you come back to the States, and again, you have a choice, and you could have chosen to live wherever you wanted, and you chose to live in an inner city around those who are less advantaged, and you're able to do the same thing for them that you did in Rwanda, and you chose to do that. Now, I find that amazing and fascinating, and you know, you chose to be the minority when you came back to the States, and it's amazing what you're able to do and help them. And I'm sure they're very appreciative of that, but it's got to be different for you being back in your home country. And then you're in an area where you are a minority and you're receiving the reciprocated kind of how those kids are, you know, treated when they're minorities. So how does that feel, or like, how did you handle that?
Rwanda really gave me a lot of training for that, because I would be walking through these villages, only white person that's ever been in some of these remote villages, right? The whole village comes running up to see this person I've never seen before, right? They're tracing the veins on my arms because they've never seen veins through, you know, white skin, and, you know, petting my leg hair and all this kind of stuff. You get invited into houses, and then you just have 100 people just staring at you. No one can speak English. They're just staring at you.
Right.
And so I got used to being a minority or the outcast or whatever. Right. And some of those are the different person in those scenarios. And so they're coming back in English and everyone was nice. So it was very, a lot easier, I guess, to kind of get involved into this community. Even though there's still challenges and there's still a lot of conflict between race in this day and age, right? I've been in this community through George Floyd stuff and everything. And so there's still a lot of distrust between different racial groups, but it's been a huge blessing to get to be a part of this community.
That's great. What are some of the things you've been able to help the youth in your hometown, you know, where you're living right now? What are some of the like cool things you've been able to do for them?
Yeah, I think, a bunch of stuff. Really what mentorship is all about is to be able to listen and encourage. And that's what my role really is in these kids' lives. It's nothing else besides listen to you. I want to listen to you. I want to encourage you. I think where our lives intersect and where we've got some commonality is I had a lot of times, even though I grew up in a totally different background and you know, white suburban upper middle class neighborhood and all that stuff, I had times where I challenged or I struggled with my self-worth and whether I felt worthy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the core issue with a lot of these kids too, especially if they're coming from fatherless homes, if they have these father wounds where their dads, you know, leave them, man, that just leaves this huge hole in their heart. Worthy. I had taken take groups of kids up to camps up in the mountains, and it's really fun because they're all these inner city kids and gang members and all stuff, and they go up to the mountains and they turn back into kids again, where they're like afraid of, is there a bear out here? Or they're like jumping on the grass because they're so used to cement that the grass is like a trampoline to them, and just seeing them in those environments. But what also gives us is time to have some real deep conversations. And one conversation in particular is late at night. This one of my guys was just bawling his eyes out, crying. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know at the time, somebody else comes grabbing me and says, hey, this kid's calling for you. I go there, I just sit right down next to him. I don't even know what he's crying about. He just puts his head in my chest, a 17-year-old big dude, and he's just bawling his eyes out and just drenching my, you know, shirt of how much he's wailing. He can't even talk. He's crying so much. And minutes and go by, and he finally is able to kind of breathe and talk. And then the one thing he says is, why doesn't my dad want me?
Oh, geez.
And that is what, man, this core wound he has, where his dad lives 15 minutes away from him his whole life, but has never been a part of his life, never come see him, never been there for a birthday, never picked him up to go fishing or whatever.
Oh, my goodness.
And so it's just these deep core wounds. And so anyway, that's what I get to do, is I get to be there to listen, encourage, and to just love on these kids.
Wow. Oh man, I can't even put myself in that kid's shoes. And I think taking him out of his element into the mountains allowed him to really feel safe to let his emotions out. You know, how many of us don't do that, you know? And
Yeah, we talk I talk a lot about that, is it's when they're out here in the city and in their schools and their gangs, whatever, they put this mask on,
of
and
course.
this mask is, I'm so hard and so tough, I don't have any feelings, everything's fine.
Yeah.
And then when they get to be out of that environment, whether it's at my house or up in the mountains or whatever, they get to take this mask off and they get to be kids again. They get to be vulnerable and they get to be real.
Yeah.
And then they get to share these, share these deep core wounds, and to be able to then start processing through the this traumas that they've
Yeah.
had, just things they've been exposed to be able to work through it. One of the things I think about is the greatest gift you can give someone is to make it feel safe and enough to for them to share the things they don't want anyone to know. Right. So there's a
Absolutely.
lot of kids that fall into this category. They don't want people to know how much their dad hurt them by not being there, or how much their dad hurt them because they were there and they, abused them and all this other stuff. Or I got man, one of my boys shared that when he was 4, he got his dad has never been in his life. His mom left him in a motel for 3 days without any food or water,
Oh.
and he had a 2-year-old sister. He was 4 years old taking care of this, 2-year-old sister, not knowing if his mom would ever come back, right? Starving and all this stuff. And so there's just these deep core wounds
My God.
these kids have, and then they don't have anyone to share it to and process through that with, and so that's something that I get to do.
So going back to the young man who's upset because why does my dad not want me? Do you, knowing that he's the father's 15 minutes away, do you ever have like an inclination of going to and talking to the father? Or you, like, where are your boundaries? Like, what limits do you have to put on yourself? How does your heart not like pull you? I don't know. How do you do it?
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely have talked to a lot of parents. I think part of having a relationship with these kids and young men, a lot of them are 17, 18, 19, 20, but even having a relationship with them, right, is being able to know their whole family. And part of Black culture is, get to know the whole family and everything. So
Yeah.
there is a lot of that. This kid in particular that I shared in the story, his dad has 20 other children. So 19 others, 20 total kids.
Oh my God.
Between I think like 12 or 15 different women, and so it's it's just like it's a totally different world,
Right.
and I've never gotten to meet him ever,
Right.
so to be able to have that conversation. But there's other kids where I do get to know their dads,
Yeah.
who their story is the same. Their dad wasn't there for them. They've never been parents, or they've never had a father to know what it's
Right.
like to father. And I'm seeing this now a couple generations, because I've been doing this long enough where some of my kids, one of my dudes had a kid at 15 and he's 20 now, so he's got this 5-year-old, and he's not really doing a good job being his life, because I know his story, and his dad was never in his life. He was his dad was living at his girlfriend's house, and he was staying in a house by himself that they just rented, and he had to fend for himself. And so he ended up dropping out of school to sell crack so that he could buy food and groceries for himself. Never got his high school education, never been parented, and so has no idea how to do that for his own child.
Unbelievable. Yeah. And since it's perpetual, how do you, I mean, you're working hard to like hopefully stop that pattern, and be in that stopgap for these kids. It's amazing. I'd love to see this turn around for the better, you know, on a consistent basis. And if there are more people like you, Jeff, maybe that can start to happen. I give you a ton of credit, my friend.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I think, I mean, that is really what I want to be, is a hope dealer. And so somebody that is giving them hope to then want to change their own lives. And I'm seeing a ton of that. There's a lot of kids that when I first got to know them, they were gangbanging, getting money illegally, a lot of drugs, unfaithful to, their girlfriends, and just this lifestyle of debauchery, to now, and he's working at the airport at an airline. He's been there for months and months and months in a row now, which is a huge win to be able to stable job. He's got housing. He's got savings. He's been with his girlfriend for 2 years now. He's got all this stuff, and so you're able to see this progress through, through being able to support and listen and encourage, and just keep them accountable. Everybody knows the right thing to do. They just don't have the accountability to do it.
Absolutely.
Right. So you think about that with everyone knows how to lose weight, diet and exercise. Everybody freaking knows that.
Yeah.
Okay. Now you need accountability to actually do it. Right.
Absolutely.
People know how to, get jobs and have a good life. They need the accountability. Somebody that cares, loves them, will walk with them to do it. And these kids don't want this life.
No.
Kids don't run to gang life.
No.
They're actually just running away from their current life.
Right. Exactly.
Because nobody wants to have that type of lifestyle. Everybody needs to be loved and to be cared for. And if they're not getting that at home, then, man, these gangs are knocking down the door saying, hey, come be a part of this.
Yeah.
Hey, this brotherhood, this group of people that cares about you, and we're going to ride or die together, da, da, da. And then all of a sudden, oh, yeah, I need that. I need that in one of the gang because I'm running from everything else. And so that's a big part of it, too. They don't want to be in those lifestyles.
No, certainly don't. Wow. Jeff, this is an amazing, amazing story, what you're doing now. And I know when you came on, you wanted to talk more about this than what you're doing professionally. I do want to give you an opportunity to mention what you're doing professionally, if you want. If not, I totally get it. Do you want to let people know a little bit about or how to reach out to you? Because people are grasping the essence of Jeff Hall right now, so they may want to get in touch with you. What is the best way?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. I'm super passionate, as you can see, about mentorship, and I love that. I'm also really passionate about business, that I get to do both of these. My actual job is this digital marketing company. It's called Slant Marketing, and so we help new and medium-sized businesses grow and scale. And so we do everything from building their websites and their online platform businesses and grow their businesses. And so I love that. That's getslantmarketing.com. And then I also have an investment fund called Generational Wealth Partners. And so that is something I've also been really passionate about, is investing in real estate and in businesses. And so in that fund, we build ground up development of large residential apartment buildings in four different states. And so there's an opportunity for investors to be involved in some of these deals and share in the profits. And so that's been a huge blessing for me too. And so that's thegenerationalwealthpartners.com. But I can also give you my email. But what I also love about these is I get to link these two lives together. And so I've got an internship program with Generational Wealth Partners that is teaching these kids about how to save money. I mean, this is these kids have never seen savings. They've never seen people with stable jobs. They've never seen education and all this stuff. And so I get to have them walk with my actual company to see, hey, here's how I bought my first house. Here's how you roll equity into the next deal. Here's how you save and invest. And here, come meet the network that I've been able to create and hear from these other these big multimillionaire people with all these companies and hear what they're saying.
Yeah.
And so that's been awesome to be able to kind of marry these two lives together, where it's not gang life. It's like now they're bringing them all together and just infusing these two lives together, which I love.
Yep, you are. You're providing hope for these kids, which is wonderful. Absolutely. So I have two questions to wrap this up. My first question to you, Jeff, is you have an opportunity to sit down with young 7 to 10-year-old Jeff, and you want to give him advice about life. What are you going to tell him?
Man, I would say at 7 and 10, I was still just a lot of my life. I was worried about what my future would look like. I just kind of want this to keep achieving and keep doing and growing. And part of that would just stress me out of like, what is the future going to look like? I read back through my old journals, and most of my journals is like stressed about, all right, hitting this next goal and this next thing. And so that's what I would tell my younger self, is like, hey, stop stressing about the future, like live in the moment and enjoy it more.
That's great. All right. So shift, you put your business hat on and you're talking to young Jeff, the young businessman, young entrepreneur, and you want to give him advice about business. What are you going to tell him?
Your network is your net worth, right? And so you've heard that term before, but I would just continue to encourage myself and others. You've got to pursue mentorship and growing your network, because that is that is really what opens all the doors to opportunities is these deep relationships with the right people.
Ah, love that. Love that. Well, Jeff, I want to thank you for coming on, man. I'm glad you're in my life. And if I remember correctly, RJ Johnson introduced us, correct? Yep. All right. So we got to thank RJ absolutely. For the introduction. There's a reason why we know each other, Jeff, and we're going to keep the relationship and conversation going. Keep doing what you're doing. You're a great human being, and you're bringing so much value to other people's lives. Keep doing it, man.
Man, thanks, Drew. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. So take care, everybody.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed the episode, please subscribe and give us a review to help others find it. If you find yourself immersed in adversity and would like to find support from other men in times of struggle, please become a member of my Men Supporting Men collaboration tribe by emailing me at drew@profitcompassion.com, expressing your interest, and I'll get in touch with you. Speak to you soon.